Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Please be seated. In the first case today, 2023-0376, in the matter of Sean Jones versus the Kent City School District Board of Education. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Peters. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Chief Justice Kennedy, Your Honors, may it please the court. My name is Patrick Peters, and along with my colleague who is sitting at council table but will not be presenting argument, Jackson Biesecker, and our firm, Jackson Lewis, I represent the appellant, Kent City School District, in this case. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. There are three independent reasons why this court should overturn the decision of the 11th District. First, the courts lack jurisdiction under relevant labor code. Second, the trial court did not abuse its discretion when it found that the Kent City School District complied with the requirements of 3319 in non-renewing Mr. Jones's contract. And finally, even if the court finds jurisdiction was proper and the trial court abuses discretion, the appellate court standard goes beyond what is in OTES, the Ohio Teacher Evaluation System, and sets an impermissible standard, an impossible standard, that teachers could circumvent to avoid the non-renewal of their contracts. Ultimately, at issue before this court is how the term formal observation is defined under Ohio law with respect to teacher evaluations under the revised code 3319. For teachers like Mr. Jones, who was employed by Kent under a limited contract. To non-renew Mr. Jones's contract and comply with the statute, Kent had to subject him to three formal observations within a prescribed time period. While the first two are not at issue, both the appellant and the appellee agree were proper under both the statute and the collective bargaining agreement at issue here, Mr. Jones was absent from work for the third and did not return prior to the expiration of the period within which those three evaluations or observations, I apologize, had to be completed. To comply with the statute and with its own collective bargaining agreement with the teachers' union, Kent conducted the third formal observation of Mr. Jones' students without him present. The questions for the court today: do courts or the party's labor contract determine what is a formal observation?
Okay, well, what does the labor contract say about formal observation?
It is not defined specifically as a term, but it does mandate certain other aspects of a formal observation that would be applicable here. For example, and I'll get to this, Your Honor.
Just tell me how the labor contract helps you, because I'm having a hard time seeing that.
Sure. So under 3319, prior to to a revision in 2012, the CBA could totally supersede the revised code when it comes to teacher evaluations. And now it says it cannot supersede conflicting provisions. So our position here is that because the term is undefined, it can't be conflicting.
But what's the term in the CBA that helps you?
The term of the CBA is that an arbitrator and not the court should determine, based on the party's past practice, based on the negotiation of the contract, what exactly constitutes a formal observation. So there's a lot beyond.
Is there a clause that says that?
What's that?
Is there a clause that says what you just said?
There is in the Memorandum of Understanding, which is part of the CBA, describes the evaluation procedures. But again, neither the revised code nor the CBA directly define that term, Your Honor.
And does the CBA incorporate the OTES procedures?
The CBA references the OTES procedures, which are a guide. The revised code goes on.
Why, if the CBA referenced those procedures, why wouldn't we look to those as what a formal evaluation means?
Well, you wouldn't look, Your Honor. An arbitrator would, and after going through and exhausting the administrative remedies, then Mr. Jones would have an appeal right with the courts. But we never went through that step. So our position is, number one, that it should have been conducted pursuant to the grievance procedure under the CBA, and an arbitrator should have decided what was meant by a formal observation and not the court. But even still, the formal observation which our client, the school district, conducted, the trial court found to be sufficient under the statute and under the collective bargaining agreement, that the appellate court substitute its own judgment, so went beyond a review of abuse of discretion, and then set a standard that goes beyond
the Didn't it just apply the definition in the OTES?
There is no definition in the OTES.
Well, the OTES makes clear that formal evaluation involves in-person watching the teacher, doesn't it?
And Your Honor, I would disagree. In OTES, the formal evaluation, a formal observation consists of a visitation of a class period or the viewing of a class lesson. It does not go on to say that a teacher must be present. And in fact, OTES contemplates that there are multiple aspects of a lesson that can be observed without a teacher, whether the students are learning, retaining, participating. There is nowhere in OTES that requires in-person attendance by the teacher.
How does Jones own noncompliance in this? You know, it sounds like the district was willing to give him this required observation, but he didn't comply. He didn't take advantage of it.
That's an interesting issue, Your Honor. So Mr. Jones, on the morning of the third evaluation, called off sick and remained sick beyond the expiration of the period within which that observation had to take place.
My understanding, he was in the hospital.
I believe he went to the emergency room and did present a doctor's note. Yes, Your Honor.
So he wasn't in the hospital was he admitted to the hospital?
That I do not know, Your Honor. My understanding is that he went to the emergency room for stress and had a doctor write him off work for 3 weeks.
And if I read the facts right, it was something with his heart?
I'm not aware of any specific diagnosis. Under the statute, this is important, Your Honor, is that under 3319, there is a medical leave of absence that the revised code talks to that a school board must approve, provided certain conditions were met. Mr. Jones never applied for a medical leave of absence. He simply exercised his right to take sick leave under the collective bargaining agreement. Another aspect of the collective bargaining agreement that would need to be reviewed by an arbitrator is whether or not his absence was a medical leave or some other.
You didn't raise that below, right?
Nor did the other side, Your Honor. The 11th District was the first to rely on the Skilkin case, where there was an actually approved medical leave of absence under the revised code, and equated this case to that case. And we then argue in distinguishing that holding of the 11th District that this is not a medical leave of absence. So in our position, it's a clear error of law, and we did not waive it below.
You called it a medical leave of absence below.
I don't want to argue semantics with Your Honor, but the word was medical leave. I don't believe they actually, in the colloquial sense, they didn't go as far as to reference the revised code, which actually defines what a medical leave of absence is.
Well, if neither side appealed it to the 11th District, how's it relevant to us?
Because the 11th District found...
I don't care what they did. If neither of you appealed it from the trial court to the 11th District... It's not part of the court. It's not in front of us. It's not an appellate issue.
Whether he was on a medical leave of absence or not, I would agree, Your Honor. And we don't think that fact is relevant necessarily, only to distinguish from in the Skilkin case where the plaintiff in that case was on a medical leave of absence, the district there did not conduct any evaluations. She was on a year-long leave of absence, and so they felt like they were obviated of the need to conduct evaluations, and that court said no. The evaluations are required. Here, the district complied with the three observation requirement. The issue is whether or not a teacher can circumvent that requirement, making it impossible for the district to comply by not coming to work.
But this was during COVID, correct?
That's right, Your Honor.
And I'm looking at a couple questions here, but during COVID, the guidance was that the formal evaluations the evaluations didn't need to occur as required by the statute if it was going to be difficult. Am I correct on that?
There were modifications made to the observation requirements by OTES that were adopted in the Memorandum of Understanding, one of which was to extend the time period by which they had to occur. But our position has been that they were not obviated by statute, that we still were required to comply with 3319's requirement for three observations, which we believe we completed.
For three formal observations,
Formal
correct?
Observations, which is not defined in the revised code, Your Honor.
Okay, so can you just discuss for me briefly 3319.111H, notwithstanding any provision to the contrary in Chapter 4117, the requirements of this section prevail over any conflicting provisions of a collective bargaining agreement. And that was in effect at the time that the collective bargaining agreement was entered into. How does that affect the formal observation requirements of the code?
Well, Your Honor, I think ultimately the issue before the court is what's the definition of a formal observation? You know, we've seen in OTES they say it's
30. Which means they have to occur, right?
Correct.
Okay.
However, that term is undefined, and the provision you just read, which talks about superseding conflicting provisions, something can't conflict that is undefined. So in our view, the definition of a formal observation is not defined in the revised code, so it's up to the district and its union to determine what that is.
But if the memorandum of understanding is interpreted by a court to not be up to the level of the requirements in the revised code, then the revised code controls, correct?
That is correct.
And so the question is, what is formal? So what can we look to understand what formal means?
And there's many things that you can look to. What we believe is the 11th District went beyond even what OTES says. The 11th District
Where would we find, if we were to say it was or it wasn't a formal observation, where would we go as a source to find out how we should define formal observation?
Well, Your Honor, that's one of the arguments that we've raised before this court is that it's unconstitutionally vague. That term is not defined by the legislature, and it's not your job as the court to become the legislature and define what that term means.
Is this a First Amendment case?
I don't believe so.
That's the only situation where void for vagueness applies.
To answer your question, the term is undefined, and we believe that.
What about the? You told me that nothing in the OTS says that the teacher has to be observed teaching students. What about where the OTS says that a formal education is one where, quote, an evaluator observes a teacher engaging students in learning?
And again, Your Honor, there's lots of different criteria in the OTS, and I would argue that it is possible to evaluate in this particular case.
That's not the question whether it's possible to evaluate. The statement is from the OTS, an evaluator observes a teacher engaging students in learning. Is it possible to do that without the teacher being there?
We believe it is.
You can observe someone engaging students.
This lesson,
without them actually being there engaging them?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
This lesson was prepared by Mr. Jones. It was delivered to his class, and we believe that the evaluation was proper. The observation, I apologize, I keep conflating those two terms. The observation was both formal because it extended beyond 30 minutes, which is what's required in OTES, and also allowed the evaluator to observe the learning and the engagement of the students in that lesson, regardless of Mr. Jones' presence or
so
not.
So Jones' participation had already taken place prior to this observation, and they were watching the response by the teachers.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But what about Naylor versus Cardinal Local School District Board of Education, that the statutes are to be liberally construed in favor of teachers? I mean, did the 11th District go too far in light of that instruction from this court since 1994?
We believe it did, Your Honor. It created a requirement that's not in OTES. And OTES, by the way, is not binding on districts. It is a guide. And districts are required under the revised code to craft their own evaluation procedures. So we believe that the 11th District, by mandating not only OTES, which isn't required, but even going beyond what OTES requires, for example, nowhere in OTES, aside from possibly reading into certain language, does it require in-person attendance by the teacher? OTES does not require pre- and post-conference meetings with the teacher. The 11th District found both. So if the 11th District's decision is left to stand, the requirements for first districts in completing evaluations will go beyond even what OTES has laid out in their guidance, which is to be used by districts to develop their own evaluation procedures.
But in the end, because of what's in the statute, regardless of what OTES does, regardless of what MOU exists, the bare bones requirements are in the revised code, and they have to be followed, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. And those requirements are three formal observations. So the issue before the court today is, what does that mean? And like the 11th District found, that means the teacher has to be physically present. And we believe that is not a requirement that's written in the statute. It's not a requirement that's written in the guidance from OTES. Even if that were to apply, we don't believe that the revised code, you know, the courts should be the ones interpreting that. That's a subject of bargaining and should be subject to the labor relations between the district and its teachers union. Ultimately, CERB could get involved at that point. And then ultimately, we feel like the trial court found that the procedure that the Kent District utilized, which was to observe a lesson that Mr. Jones had prepared, did count towards that formal observation, and the 11th District went beyond and substituting its own judgment that it did not. I have 19 seconds. I thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Eisenbrei, good morning.
Your Honor, good morning. Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court, I'm Dan Eisenbrei, and along with my co-counsel, Haley Walker and Don Malarsik, I represent the appellee, Sean Jones. The issue before the court today is whether a teacher must be present engaging students in learning to receive a formal observation for the purposes of Revised Code Section 3319.111E, and whether it's to the court applying the principles of statutory interpretation to define what formal observation means, as opposed to being bound by individual collective bargaining agreements on a case-by-case basis that refer to that term. Because a teacher must be seen engaging students in learning to have a formal observation, and because the term formal observation is statutory and requires strict compliance and must be liberally construed in favor of teachers, the 11th District's decision should stand. Justice Fisher and Justice DeWine, you expressed some concerns, and before I get into my argument, I want to address this point about whether or not the issue of the nature of Mr. Jones's medical leave is before the court, and it is not. And not only was it not raised at any level, but it was actually conceded by the board at the hearing. At no point in time were the Kent City Schools convinced or have reason to believe that Mr. Jones had anything other than a legitimate absence for medical reasons. And the record is void of any evidence of any malice or bad faith on Mr. Jones's behalf. Justice Bruner, you asked how courts would look to define the statutory term formal observation, and I would suggest the courts would do exactly what the 11th District did, and that is the 11th District consulted an administrative agency, the Ohio Department of Education, that created OTES and consulting the mandatory revised code provisions and performed its analysis as to what that term means through the help of the administrative agency. Because ultimately, that is a statutory term, and its compliance is required by the Ohio Revised Code. If we were to accept the position of the appellees, we'd have districts, potentially neighboring districts, under the same set of facts coming to different conclusions as to what the term formal observation means. This is a term that's required by the Revised Code, and it's for the courts to determine.
So let me ask you, there's been kind of a movement most recently by this court to move away from agency interpretation to, in terms of deferring to agency interpretation to determine what the formal meaning would be under the statute. In the past, there's been a body of case law saying we defer first to the administrative agency, and then if that doesn't seem reasonable, we go beyond there. We're moving away from that. So What case law could we look to, or other statutes? I brought up the statute about the liberal construction in favor of teachers. Is there other case law we could look to?
Your Honor, this term is undefined. So the court looking at I believe it's Revised Code Section 1.42 but it has a technical term, a technical meaning, the courts could engage in statutory interpretation as authorized by the statute. But even if this court doesn't adopt the 11th District's decision, which we believe was sound as to what that term means, and what the 11th District did was essentially deferred to the administrative agency, this court should still adopt a definition that would mean a teacher must actually be seen engaging students in learning for it to count as a formal observation. Otherwise, we could have a scenario where the evaluators could simply go to a study hall or simply observe teachers doing or students doing homework, and that could count as the formal observation of the teacher. That is contrary to what we're really looking at with the Ohio Revised Code. And the Ohio Revised Code, looking at sections 3319.11, 0.111, and 0.112, which all interplay, if we look at that, the purpose of what we're getting at is that we want, as this court has found, we want teachers, or administrators rather, to know what's being taught in the classroom and to see, as a practical matter, who these teachers are before they are making important decisions about whether or not they're going to be renewed. We're looking for things like the 11th District said, the teacher's ability to explain topics, strategies used by the teacher, teacher's rapport and communication with students, teacher's feedback to students, monitoring student behavior. These are things that inherently cannot be observed without seeing the teacher interact with students.
These things were seen in the first two observations, right?
That's correct. There were two formal observations here, and we do not dispute that.
And however, this statute puts the obligations on the school board, and they attempted to comply with it, but they couldn't because of your client's actions, right?
That's correct because of my client was not present that day.
They tried to afford him that opportunity. The school board lived up to its obligations under the statute. They attempted to. They were thwarted because your client called in sick that day.
I would respectfully disagree that that what they attempted to do was enough, Your Honor. As this court found in Snyder, strict compliance is required. They did not strictly comply with the third formal observation. And this would create incentive for school districts to, if you're going to go through this very specific process that's outlined and required strict compliance by the statute, you better make sure that you do it right. What the school board did not attempt to do here is initiate a for cause termination or look to terminate the teacher under some other mechanism. The school board chose 3319.111, chose the non-renewal as opposed to a for cause termination route, and therefore they had to comply with the letter of the law on that. And they had to give him three formal observations.
So what stops a teacher, if we adopt your position, the last formal education in the period, teacher just calls in sick that day, and you can't non-renew him.
Your Honor, this hypothetical is exactly what this court addressed in Skilton, where the school board argued, much like they do here, that this would create incentive for teachers to just not participate and to remove themselves from the process. But as a practical matter, as this court found in Skilton, there are things that the school board can do to protect against that. First of all, the school board can complete these observations earlier and make sure that they give themselves enough time to get these done.
Well, here they had a pretty compressed window, and they did two of them earlier. They offered to, they did two of them earlier, and they were, he called off for the rest of the time. I mean, that's what else were they supposed to do?
Your Honor, there was a compressed window because of the school board's, largely because of the school board's own doing, and that they waited until the end to go through this process. That the record reflects that there was the complaints at issue here went back to all the way to October. So this was pre-COVID. This was at the beginning of the school year. They let Mr. Jones know they were going to put him on this evaluation process in January. And yet they did not do these observations until May pushing up against even the extended deadline. And Mr. Jones actually, the record is clear on this, he attempted to cooperate. He told the evaluator, hey, I know you're up against the time for this. Come to my office hours. I have office hours on, here's the days I have them. This was not a situation where Mr. Jones was just trying to, game the system in some way.
Would observing office hours have counted?
Potentially, Your Honor. I think what really matters
potentially,
is...
Potentially, yes or no.
Yes, it may have. They may have counted if you can observe these types of things, which...
In what kind of circumstance would that have counted, office hours, if you were engaging with students during office hours, more than one student?
As long as the teacher is engaging a student, and we are in a position now where... it's more and more common for school teachers to have two students, three students, one student.
Sure, using the exact wording, though, would one student in an office and having office hours with Mr. Jones fit the definition?
It could, because the things we're looking at are the...
Either yes or no. So I'll go back to Justice DeWine's question and Justice Stewart's question. Yes or no?
Yes. Yes, it would could count as long as you were seeing the teacher engage the student in the communications.
So you can assure us that if that's what the school board had done, they'd fired him after watching him in office hours. We wouldn't be here.
Yes.
You wouldn't bring a claim saying that wasn't a formal observation.
That's correct, but that's not what happened here. We didn't get an observation of Mr. Hypothetical, to clarify my response, this is assuming that students are coming to the office hours. It has to be an observation of the teacher and the student engaging in learning.
Here is the school board should be acting with greater swiftness. So the minute they get a complaint, they should immediately start formal observations to give themselves enough time. Is that the other part of that?
Yes, Your Honor, school boards should make this a priority. If they're going to go this route, where the revised code provides rights to teachers and strict compliance is required, the school board should make it a priority. As I said previously, there's other ways that school boards can get rid of a teacher.
Could we go back to the definition of formal evaluation? Do I have the understanding correctly that during COVID there was actually statutory changes that said if a district board determined it would be impossible or impracticable to do so, that they could dispense with the formal observation?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's House Bill 197. But
so follow my line of thinking here, if you would indulge me. That would be because everything was happening virtually over a screen. And is it possible that the thinking of the legislature was it's going to be pretty hard to actually observe a teacher in a classroom when all the kids are just little faces on the screen? And does that give us the ability to say that it appears that the legislature envisions a formal evaluation to be the teacher in the classroom? Because if they dispense with it during COVID because of the difficulty of virtual education, then that must be what they had in mind with formal evaluation, or am I stretching it too much?
Your Honor, I believe you're referring to House Bill 197, and House Bill 197 granted the Superintendent of Public Instruction the authority to waive or extend certain deadlines. And what House Bill 197 said that the districts could decide whether or not they wanted to do these observations, but if they decided they were going to do them, then they had to comply with 3319.111. House Bill 197 did not relieve these boards from complying with the strict requirements of that statute.
So if they wanted to not extend a teacher's contract, they still had to do the three formal observations.
That's correct.
Or evaluations. Okay.
That's
thank
correct.
You. Thank you. So how do we figure out what formal means?
Your Honor, this court should engage in its ordinary canons of statutory interpretation to define the statutory term of formal observation. What the 11th District did and is it looked to the administrative agency. It looked to the Ohio Department of Education and OTES to do it. But and our position is that that reasoning was sound. OTES itself actually is more or less a guide for how to comply with requirements contained in 3319.111 and 3319.112, and those are incorporated into OTES. So what we can't have is a situation where we're leaving this on a case-by-case basis to collective bargaining agreements to define a term that's in the revised code and that requires strict compliance, and it is so important that the legislature said you have appellate rights directly to the courts if these certain procedures are not followed. This is a matter for the courts to interpret a statute, and it's for that reason why we believe the 11th District should be affirmed. And if the court has no further questions, I will briefly conclude. 3319.11e, again, it's a remedial statute. It's to be liberally construed in favor of teachers. It requires strict compliance. And applying that statute, a teacher may not receive a formal observation unless that teacher is seen teaching students. Please affirm. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Peters, you have 15 seconds left. I'll give you a minute.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. Very quickly, just to address a few of the statements that were made during the appellee's presentation, the 11th edition did much more than defer to OTES. They went beyond what OTES requires. Also, this is a mandatory subject of bargaining, not mandatory, but a subject of bargaining. And to answer many of the questions that were lodged before, you know, the memorandum of understanding led to the Kent City School District putting in procedures, including a walkthrough counting as a formal observation. So the term is subject to bargaining because it's not defined, and the labor relations between the district and its teachers' union should be the sole arbiter of what that term means. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll receive a decision from the court.